This is the Frogcast.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to the Frogcast. We said we would get back with you before spring football wrapped up, and we had a change that many of us expected was coming, didn't know if it was actually going to happen, but the Horned Frogs are looking for a new basketball coach. After four seasons where we saw little spurts of progress, but nothing measurable, nothing to keep his job, Trent Johnson has been let go as the head coach of the Horned Frog basketball team. 4 years into a six-year contract with two left, Chris Del Conte decided, if we're going to compete in the Big 12, we have got to make a change. Now, Daniel and Trey and I have joked many, many times on here that we wanted to postpone this podcast until baseball really fired up because none of us were massive basketball fans. Well, we're going to remedy that tonight. We're going to bring on Andrew Feltz of Frogs of War, who is clearly the biggest basketball fan and has more knowledge in terms of what the Frogs do right and what they do wrong and has followed them closer than probably anybody I can think of these last few years. Andrew, welcome to our podcast. We appreciate you having you on tonight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. That's quite the introduction.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember when we were actually in the top 25. I was in school when Billy Tubbs was the coach, and that was the last time we actually made the NCAA tournament back in 1998. So we're going to, needless to say, that has not been our issue the last few years. Well, I want to just dive right in, Andrew, because you know this as well as anybody. Summarize for us the Trent Johnson years. We've had, you know, entering in the Big 12 in 2012. We had a change with Trent Johnson coming in from LSU. What has this experience been like, and why did it not work?
You know, I think when you look back, you know, take yourself back 4 years, and you look at TCU, a really mediocre, to put it bluntly, program coming out of the Mountain West. And you get thrown into the Big 12, and Jim Christian decides he's going to leave for Ohio. And so all of a sudden, Chris Del Conte has to make this decision of who's going to be the guy that's going to lead us into the Big 12 and kind of oversee this transition. And he pulls Trent Johnson from LSU. Obviously, he had had success at Nevada. He'd had success at Stanford. He was pretty successful at LSU. And so I think at the time, it looked like a pretty solid hire. And you know, I remember Trent Johnson's introductory press conference. He talked about, you know, how excited he was, and he was committed to seeing this thing. It was going to be a long process, a long rebuilding process. And I think to kind of summarize it holistically, looking back at the 4 years, you know, the first season was rough, but I think a lot of fans overlooked that 2-16 record because of that upset of Kansas. You say, you know, you finished, I think they were 11-21 in his first season, but hey, we beat Kansas. So, you know, all was right with the world. Right. And so you go to that next season, and TCU becomes the first team ever to go 0-18 in the Big 12. And so that's, you know, you set the bar pretty low that year. You come back last season and win 18 games. You're right on the bubble for the NIT. You're looking like, you know, you could potentially be competing for a postseason spot somewhere. And I think you come into this season and you've got that kind of momentum. You obviously lose Kean Anderson, you lose Trey Ziegler, you lose Amrick Fields, three guys that were pretty important pieces of that 18-15 team from a year ago. But you get into this season, and really for me, it was probably in December when it became pretty clear that this team was going to take a further step backward than kind of we all had thought when those three players had graduated. And you know, it was really, you get into Big 12 play, and it was hard to kind of figure out what this team was trying to accomplish, what their goal was, what their game plan was. And I think when you look holistically back at Trent Johnson's 4 years at TCU, the biggest thing that stands out to me is from that day that he stepped foot on campus in 2012 until that game last Thursday against West Virginia in the Big 12 tournament, it was never clear to me what kind of the plan was and what his steps for success were and how he was going to take TCU from this kind of bottom of the pack Mountain West team and even make it semi-respectable in the Big 12. And so I think that's one of the big factors that was led into Chris Del Conte's decision. Obviously, you've got this $72 million basketball facility. You recruiting is picking up. You've got, you know, more donor support, more university support than maybe this program has ever had. And they're, to me, and I think a lot of people might agree with this, you guys, I'm sure, can touch on this as well, but I never really got the feeling that hey, this is the plan and this is what they're trying to do and this is where the program's going to be. And that I think was the most kind of the most frustrating element in all of this. It's just kind of, you know, they went out and they played for 40 minutes and the game was over and they went and did it again. And, you know, from game to game and from season to season, you never really saw anything develop.
Yeah, I think that's probably a very accurate assessment. I never felt like this is the plan. We're able to measure our success on these standards. Even when we're not meeting them, we know when we're seeing progress and we know where we're going. That just seemed to be, you know, whatever we did was what we were trying to do. And that was unfortunately evident on the court more times than not. So you've got, you know, like you mentioned, we've got all of these tools for a thriving basketball program. And we've made this comment on the show a couple of times. TCU fans for basketball have realistic expectations. I use the comparison that we are like Iowa State football fans. You know, we don't believe that we belong at the top of the conference after two good years. All we want to do is go to the NIT every for 2 years and then go to the NCAA tournament the third year. If we did that, you would get a statue built to you for it at the new Schollmeyer Arena. What do you think is missing to make TCU basketball that kind of competitive program that just kind of dances around a little below 500 in the Big 12?
Yeah, I think one thing that the program needs, kind of like you said, and one thing that this new coach is going to be is really going to have to hammer home from the very beginning is I think this program needs to have an identity, define themselves. And you know, I think around the Big 12 and around the nation, people look at TCU and say, TCU, you know, small private school, good at football and no basketball history, right? When you look at Trent Johnson's first couple seasons, especially that year last year, that team was really kind of built around that defense. And you said, okay, well, you know, we're holding Kansas's or we're holding Texas and Baylor to, you know, 50, 60 points a game, 70 points a game. And it's been pretty successful. And so that you at least felt like there was maybe the tiniest bit of a foundation there. And then you look at Trent Johnson's recruiting classes going into last season and coming into this season that just ended, and he's recruiting scorers and guys that really weren't focused on playing defense. And that translated to the on-the-court play. And so, you know, you look at this, like, you think that this is maybe going to be a defensive-heavy team, and that's going to be kind of your signature. It's that, you know, oh, we got to go play at TCU, always a, you know, tough defense or whatever. And then you go and kind of counteract that by the types of players that you're recruiting. And so I think the one thing that this program is missing is really an identity. And I think it's one of those situations where if you bring in the right coach that maybe has, and again, kind of going back to what we just talked about, but somebody that has at least somewhat of an idea of where they want to take this program, I think that's something that you can develop, at least on paper, pretty quickly. Obviously, with how good the Big 12 is, it's going to take longer for on the court success to kind of catch back up. But I think that's the biggest thing for me is TCU basketball was an unknown prior to when they joined the Big 12 conference. And I think 4 years later, it still is an unknown program to a lot of people.
Yeah, I will concur with that. You mentioned how difficult it's going to be to climb up the ladder, just to climb out of the basement in the Big 12, which is hands down the best basketball conference in the country. What makes the Big 12 so competitive? I mean, it's easy to say, you know, this is a great conference for quarterbacks, or the SEC is a great conference for defensive linemen. What makes the Big 12 specifically the best basketball program in the country when I don't feel as if, you know, the grassroots of high school programs fuel that kind of college passion and success that is clearly evident on the floor and putting seven out of 10 teams in the Big Dance?
You know, I think it's kind of come full circle here, but I think a lot of the Big 12 success has been because of the coaches in this league. I mean, you got to start at the top with Bill Self and just the unprecedented success that he's had back when he was at Tulsa and at Illinois and at Kansas, obviously. And you look at a coach like Bob Huggins, who, again, he just wins wherever he goes. I think he is maybe third or fourth in the nation at active coaches, you know, number of wins. And you look throughout this conference, Tubby Smith is another great example. Blanking on his name, Scott Drew at Baylor has really built that program from nothing into a perennial NCAA tournament team. And so I think it starts with these coaches that bring in these winning pedigrees and that have these standards that, hey, we're going to win. We're going to win from the very beginning, and we're competing in the Big 12 Conference, and our goal is to win a championship and get to the NCAA tournament and go from there. But I also think one thing that really helps the Big 12's kind of the pedigree, and you touched on this a little bit, but is a lot of these schools, again, Kansas comes to mind, Iowa State comes to mind, even Texas Tech the last couple of years, Texas has started doing this, but they have really great home court advantages and really fun atmospheres. And when you're a high school kid and you're watching these games on TV, or if you're at the arena in person on a recruiting trip or whatever, and you see that kind of passion and that kind of excitement and that kind of energy surrounding these programs, why would you not want to go play college basketball there? I lived out in Austin, and we were at the Texas-North Carolina game, and Texas had a bunch of young recruits in the house, and that the atmosphere at that game was unbelievable to see Texas go up against North Carolina. And of course, they went on the buzzer beater, and the next day, I think two of those kids committed. And so, you know, high school players notice that kind of stuff, and they notice how fans react to their team and how supportive the schools are of these programs. And so, you know, I think that's one thing that's helped make the Big 12 so successful. And again, something that TCU is going to have to work on, but definitely one thing of many. But I think with the Big 12, kind of that mantra that success breeds success, and it's been Kansas's league for, you know, 12 years now, and everybody, the Oklahomas, the West Virginias, the Texases, everybody says, somebody, we've got to step up and we've got to beat Kansas. And that motivates these coaches to recruit better and motivates these players to play harder. And I think that just that kind of competition just breeds further competition. And it's a great thing for the league and a great thing for college basketball.
Yeah, I've contended that there's like six or seven powerhouse programs in college basketball. You know, your Kentuckys and your Dukes and your North Carolinas and your Kansas. And then everybody else is just fighting to be 1B. And I don't see any, those programs like West Virginia has stepped up. You know, A&M has stepped up this year. You can't deny that. And there's other programs that it's just a matter of passion and institutional support. And most importantly, like you mentioned, you know, having the right coach. If those things get into play, there's no reason that a team like TCU can't take 4 or 5 years and build and become a competitive program, not only in the Big 12, but to, you know, get to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. I don't see any reason why that we can't do that even in the conference that we're in. Do you think that that's attainable?
Yeah, absolutely. I meant to piggyback on this beforehand, but I think your comment about expectations as far as TCU fans are concerned was you hit that right on the head. I don't think there's any, you know, sane TCU fan out there that wouldn't be happy with, you know, finishing 500. And hey, if we knock on the door for an NIT bid, or if we go to the NIT, or we are, you know, in the conversation on the bubble for the NCAA tournament that last weekend, that's a huge step forward for this program. And, you know, I think playing in the Big 12 for a school like TCU is an advantage and a big disadvantage. It's obviously a disadvantage from the standpoint of the other nine teams that you're playing are all fantastic. I mean, you look at this season, the seven of the nine other teams not named TCU went to the NCAA tournament, and they're all a high seed, and they're all going to, you know, be favored in their opening round games. And so on the flip side of that, the advantage playing in the Big 12, when you look at somebody like Texas Tech, I think is a good case study of this. But when we entered that last week of the regular season, I believe Texas Tech was 8-8, and almost everybody was saying they're in the NCAA tournament. Even if they lose out and finish 8-10 in conference play, they're still going to be locked for the NCAA tournament. And you look at what actually happens. They go 1-1 in the regular season. They're 9-9 in the Big 12. Obviously, they lose to TCU in the Big 12 tournament, and they're an 8 seed in the NCAA tournament. And so by virtue of playing in this just incredible college basketball conference, you're going to have great metrics. If you win 9 games, you're beating somebody that's good. You're going to have several quality wins on your resume. And so really, realistically, to get to a point where you're in the NCAA tournament or at least knocking on the door, you've just got to win 8 Big 12 games. And that's something that should be, especially when you consider the amount of resources that the university is pumping into this program, that should be something that is attainable for a program like TCU. And again, I just think Texas Tech is a great example of this, but you have a school that doesn't have much college basketball pedigree. You've got a Hall of Fame coach in Tubby Smith, and he recruits, you know, 2-3 star players, and he's got them in the NCAA tournament. And so I think that's something to kind of strive for. And that's a level where TCU can, and I think should be competing at here in the next 5, 6, 7 seasons.
Absolutely. That's what we're hoping for. Well, as you mentioned, a head coach is what it's going to be needed to pull the trigger, to take us, you know, out of the basement and up to that next level that we're all hoping for. Let's just waste some time here and speculate. Tell me 3 or 4 coaches that you think are a realistic coach that we could hire, as well as somebody that you think would match to the need to this program and what we need in the leadership and the passion that I think we think is absolutely needed to take this program to the next level. Who do we want to waste time talking about that could be the next head coach for the Frogs?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously I'm going to come in with a little bit of a biased perspective, but I think that watching this coaching search and watching how this plays out over the next, you know, 2-3 weeks and maybe a month, it's going to be really fascinating, because when you look at this dynamic, you have Chris Del Conte, who is almost forced into kind of making a home run hire and making hiring a coach that fans are going to be excited about. And it's going to be able to, you know, send a spark into this program and really kind of get this team playing to where it needs to be playing. But at the same time, if you're Chris Del Conte, you really can't afford to make a mistake. And we can't be sitting here in 4 years having the same discussion of what does TCU need to do? Why did they fire their coach? You know, this has got to be somebody that's going to energize the program and then also have the ability to stay for a long time. And when you look at the current coaching landscape, I think the number of names that are out there that fit that description is it's not an expansive list. And so there's a lot of people that I would rather be than Chris Del Conte this week. But to get back to your question, I think they're kind of at this interesting crossroads of, do you kind of go that same Trent Johnson route, and do you find a coach maybe from another power conference program or somebody that's been to the NCAA tournament, maybe somebody that's a little bit older, that's experienced, that's going to be more of like a mentor type, a lot like the kind of guy that Trent Johnson was? Or do you kind of follow that opposite path and you look for somebody that's younger, somebody that has that energy and that really that excitement level, but maybe not necessarily have as long as a resume as somebody that's more experienced might be? So I think kind of a good a mixture of those two is a coach that I've gotten more and more excited about the more I read about him, but that's Stephen F. Austin's Brad Underwood, who just finished his third season at the school, and I believe I just looked at that, he's 88-13 in three seasons at Stephen F. Austin. He has a 53-1 record in Southland Conference play. And so obviously it's not going to translate 100% to the Big 12, and there's going to be, you know, issues. You can't take somebody's record in the Southland Conference and put it to the Big 12 and have it carry over. But he's proven that he can recruit players to come to Nacogdoches, Texas, and play for Stephen F. Austin. And not only that, but he's getting the most out of these players. And he's taking these players that are probably 2- and 3-star recruits out of high school and probably don't have many Division I offers, and he's turning them into guys that are winning 25, almost 30 games a year and going to the NCAA tournament on a regular basis. And you kind of build off that. He was an assistant coach at Kansas State under Bob Huggins and Frank Martin. Knows the conference, obviously knows recruiting in Texas. And so he's only 52 years old. I think he's a guy that brings a lot of the kind of the qualities that you're looking for in a coach. But I think maybe the biggest downside to that is he's not that home run guy. You're not going to pick up the newspaper and see TCU hires Brad Underwood and everybody's going to instantly know who that is and know that, you know, hey, what a great hire, you know? And so I think that's maybe a one deterrent.
I think it would be a home run for what it's worth.
I think so too. I think it would be a great hire. I think, you know, looking long-term, somebody that's been there, done that, that has the type of skill set to build a program, I think he, you know, checks all those boxes. I just like I said, I think the only thing is if you're, you know, Joe fan off the street, I mean, who is that? You know, Stephen F. Austin, you know, but that's my other thing. I think from as far as a resume standpoint, he would be fantastic. I think fantastic fit. You look elsewhere, kind of, I think a very similar coach to Underwood is Scott Cross, who is finishing, I believe, his fifth season at Texas Arlington. Again, a lot like Underwood at Stephen F. Austin, but he's come to UTA, small program, again, not much college basketball history at the Division I level, and he's taken them to the NCAA tournament. He's taken them to the NIT. He's a guy that knows the DFW area. He knows what it's like to recruit against a lot of these bigger programs and a lot of these, you know, the TCUs and the SMUs and the programs are kind of in UTA's footprint. And then at the same time, I think on Monday of last week, so within the week, signed a contract extension at UTA. He's a UTA alum. And so, you know, that's one of those situations where it might not be worth it for a guy like that to leave his alma mater to, you know, go into a potentially career changing rebuilding project. And then another guy that is I'm kind of 50-50 on, at least right now, is Jeff Capel, who former Oklahoma head coach. He's currently an assistant at Duke. A guy that's a little bit older, but a guy that, again, has some of that experience at a major college program, has experience obviously recruiting players to Oklahoma and now with his role at Duke. I think anytime you can pull a guy off the Mike Krzyzewski tree, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Obviously, he got caught up in some NCAA issues at Oklahoma, and you can argue that, you know, that's obviously not something that TCU wants to get involved in, but you know, he's somebody that I think's name could be thrown around. And then the last guy that is kind of toward the top of my list that I think is intriguing is the former Oklahoma City head coach, Scott Brooks. Just from the standpoint, he's a TCU alum. He played a couple seasons at TCU, obviously was successful with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think his biggest question mark is there is just questioning, is he somebody that would want to come from the NBA? He's currently out of coaching. He was let go by Oklahoma City at the end of last season, but is he somebody that's going to want to come back and coach at the collegiate level? You know, is he even interested in still coaching, period? And so I think there's a lot of kind of question marks surrounding him and you know, just kind of his mentality. But again, it's tough. That's a tough decision to make. I don't think that there's really one or two guys out there that you can say, this is 100% who TCU needs to go after. And this is who they should be putting their resources into to picking up. You know, we've talked a lot about Jamie Dixon and his connections to TCU. And I think, you know, obviously Dixon's a great coach. I just think that a lot of the financial issues with getting out of his contract at Pittsburgh and how is TCU going to pay him an annual salary that is worth it for him to leave Pitt, and they're going to have to pay a buyout. And so I think a lot of the kind of logistical issues aren't going to work with Jamie Dixon, but you know, I think any one of those guys, obviously there's going to be pros and cons to each one, but there's a solid pool of candidates out there, I think, that TCU has to choose from.
Yeah, I think all of those guys have the potential to be quality coaches and be a great addition to the TCU family. I got one name I'm banking on, and it's for two reasons. One, I think he's a really good coach. And number two, because it would just throw more kerosene upon the already flaming inferno of TCU Baylor. I want Bryce Drew, the head coach at Valpo. I think he's a ridiculously amazing – the guy is an amazing coach. And the thing I love about him is – you know, Valpo is about an hour east of Metro Chicago, and he picks over Chicago public and suburban schools the way that Gary Patterson used to do DFW in 05 and 06. He can find kids that clearly have the potential to play Division I basketball but aren't getting recruited by, you know, the handful of powerhouses in the Midwest. And he's taking them there, and they – you know, they're in the Horizon Conference and missed the NCAA because they didn't win their conference. But they went 26-4. I would love to get him down to TCU and see what he could do with the resources in Fort Worth. So I might be an outlier on that, but I think it would be a great hire for a variety of reasons.
Hey, you know, I'm on board with that as well. He reminds me almost of maybe a lesser known Shaka Smart. He's a guy that he's very passionate. Every time I feel like you turn on a Valparaiso game, he's, you know, he's up off the bench, he's coaching, he's shouting at his guys, he's getting into it with the officials. He's, you know, an exciting guy to watch. And like you said, just tremendous success at Valparaiso and what he's been able to do at a mid-major and to be young and to have that kind of that passion and excitement and that energy. And I think your point about recruiting was spot on, because you look at the DFW market in terms of high school talent, I think it's probably very comparable to the Chicago market in that there's a ton of high schools, a ton of private schools, a ton of public schools, just a lot of talent, a lot of different players to scout and to recruit. And, you know, one thing that I really am hoping that this next coach can accomplish is to be able to kind of dominate that recruiting market in DFW. The fact that we weren't able to bring guys that are playing high school 20, 30 minutes down the road and come on an official visit to TCU was frustrating. And so, you know, I think somebody like Bryce Drew that has that knack for recruiting in a big city like Chicago, I think you find a lot of success in DFW and at TCU. So I think that's a legitimate candidate for this position.
Yeah, I would love it. I think Bryce Drew is a great coach. I live in Chicago, and I tried to become a DePaul fan when I moved here just to, you know, find a local team. They suck. I mean, yeah, DePaul basketball is awful. And it's like, why is SMU terrible in football? You have 50 three-star recruits within 30 miles of your campus. All you gotta do is get, you know, a handful of them a year. And DePaul is the exact same way. They got more talent at a pickup game at the YMCA on the north side than you've got in most in the entire state of Indiana, and they can't win. It's pathetic. So I hope Valpo is – I hope we're able to pull Bryce Drew from Valpo. That's my number two guy after Underwood, so we'll see how that goes. Well, Andrew, we want to thank you for coming on and taking the time to update us on where we're at in this coaching search and what your thoughts were not only the Trent Johnson era but what it took going forward. Anything else you want to share with folks about how to follow you on Twitter, where you write for, or anything else you want to update us on about your passion for TCU basketball before we write off here?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter. My handle is Andrew Feltz, AndrewFeltz. And then I've been writing for Frogs of War. We are on Twitter as well, just at Frogs of War and on frogsofwar.com. Certainly going to be a lot of coverage in the next couple days, weeks, and months. A lot of different moving parts in terms of, you know, obviously you start with the head coaching search. You've got to keep this roster together. You've got to reach back out to your recruits and these guys that have committed and make sure that they're still committed to this program. So definitely it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks in Fort Worth surrounding this basketball program. So it should be exciting. It's this is a kind of the front porch to success. And if you can bring in the right guy and you can really find somebody that's going to energize this program, you know, there's no reason that we can't be competing at a high level by the end of the decade or so. So it should be exciting to watch.
Yes, it will. And we will keep everybody updated on changes that we make, hopefully a quality coach that we hire. And look forward to seeing some success on the hardwood for the Horned Frogs, which has been missing for way too long. Well, we want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to us today. Track us down on iTunes. You can always find us at thefrogcast.com. And we are a proud member of the killerfrogs.com family, and you can find us there as well. So for Andrew Feltz and Daniel Southern, I am Jeff Mitchell. Thank you for listening to The Frogcast.